Blog Talk Radio.
Where are we? Come
on, baby, make it hot. Buy the cop till you hit the spot. Come on, baby, make it hot.
Doing the doggy style.
Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow wow, yippee yo,
yippee.
A pile of crap.
What the heck happened? Mark, you there? Hello? Oh, he can't hear me.
I'm dialing again.
All right, well, I'm on the air. I don't know if Dr. Mark is there or not.
That's great.
We're both talking. I can hear him talking, and he can't hear me. I don't know what's going on here. All right, I'm typing to him. We are both on the air. I hear you.
You hear me?
Yes.
I'm going to dial in again. This is about 3 weeks in a row with this.
All right. Well, we'll wait a couple minutes. As you can hear, I'm very tired tonight. Dragging ass, as it were. Let's see. Almost called. There he is. Let's click him in. Are you there?
I'm here now, damn it.
You were there before. I'm
no,
like,
I
hello,
wasn't.
Are you there? Hello?
I heard nothing. All I heard was click, whir.
You heard nothing, and you know that the old theme music played?
The old theme?
Yeah.
You know, why not? Freaking show from hell. Play the new theme, will you? Because I'm going to get rid of that next week anyway.
Oh, this is so annoying. All right, let me find it.
Wait, before you do that, just let's...
You get nothing! You lose! Good day, sir!
That's it. 9:02, and we're retheming.
All right,
so settle in, you archiving bastards.
Here you go. Hold on.
You want it on demand?
You looked at me. Do you love me? Yeah, you crazy. 5 days, you tackle me. I still got the reference, I'm so funny. Been 3 days since the afternoon. You realize it's not my fault, but only too soon. Say, you've forgiven me. And now I'll sit back and wait till you say you're sorry.
Welcome to the weekly disaster we call Soma Time. Here on the Blog Talk, I'll call it Radio Network.
Yes.
Unfreaking believable. No,
well,
actually, I have to believe it at this point. No, freak Mercury. This is Earth.
No.
There's not a speck
of
dust on Mercury going, Earth's in retrograde, damn it. And we got to watch our ass.
Perhaps there is something.
No, I believe not.
I don't know.
I choose to believe Mercury just mocks us for even referencing it.
And maybe, but there's been nothing but BS going on with electronics and other stuff around here.
Well, we'll never know. I blame it all on Comcast.
Yep.
And I blame the rest of it on Con Ed.
No, please.
So, well, it's been an interesting couple of days here. Looking around the news, and everywhere I turn is Blago, Blago, Blago.
Mm-hmm.
He's everywhere, and now I guess he's finally going to get impeached tomorrow. But
yeah, did you see him last night on Rachel's show?
Yeah, actually I did watch part of that interview. I watched too many interviews, actually, of him. The Geraldo one was my favorite, where he had to ambush him in the car.
Oh, I didn't see that, of
yeah.
course.
But there's something he's got a lot of. I mean, this is if you're late to the party here. We like to mock SAPES in the news because they demonstrate the things we talk about here, or we at least try to talk about here every week, and the Blog Talk lets us on the air.
I just got a report that someone clicked on our link and they are hearing nothing.
We're not streaming?
I don't know.
We're not streaming.
Oh.
Wow. Can't help that. We're on the air. I can't help the streaming part. That's up to them. But so if we're not streaming live and you're listening to this, Thursday morning, then there's no problem. If you're trying to get on the air live with us Wednesday night, you might have a problem.
That's right. My eye is now twitching because I'm annoyed.
Well, then everything's fine. 904-646-478-4847. I guarantee Blago didn't do any Blog Talk Radio interviews getting on the air on this dopey thing. So is there any way to tell if the from the live help, Sapes, if we are streaming or not?
I don't know.
Can that be
I just asked him to try again first.
So, because, you know, it would help to know that we're being broadcast, at least.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah, it's been interesting. But anyway, just to get back to this Blago guy, because he's one of these public figures that you can't get enough of, because he's so dysfunctional and so elaborately laced with all these incongruities that the one phrase that keeps coming up is the sanctity of my home. This guy is such a potty mouth. Him and his wife are so Tourette's that it's somehow randomly sampling any conversation he has, he sounds like a sailor on leave or something. And take it out of context. And it was so funny watching Larry King, always these people trying to get him to admit that, you know, basically he was selling the Senate seat. The Oprah story was kind of funny, you know. But that was sort of arching over the top of the news. And then in my travels in the sports talk world, tunneling under like Bugs Bunny on his way to Albuquerque, was this crazy book that Joe Torre collaborated on, where he basically went through the entire roster of the Yankees in the 12 years he was there and systematically buried everybody in 477 pages or less. And he is now being fitted for, the tar and the feathers when he comes through town next week to explain himself. And it's just the contrast of Ananto in the hot seat being Blago and just completely repeating his belief system independent of the questions being asked of him. It doesn't matter. It's the same answer. It's like a piano roll. And Torre making phone calls to people behind the scenes and trying to smooth things over and, you know, just being extremely, you know, lions and tigers and bears on my about it. So it's just funny to watch how two people in the hot seat react to the blare of the media lights. So any news on the streaming situation?
Yes, the person who couldn't hear us can now hear us, and I have the live Sapes on checking too. So
okay,
let them
well,
check.
That's good. Well, we have again changed the bunting on the shoe. Last week we were on at 10 o'clock, doing a little piggyback on the Lie to Me show, which is on right now. If you want to tune over to Fox and do a little simulcast of the show and the and that Lie to Me show. See, I really kind of looked at it two directions. When we did the show, it was obvious to me that we're going to spend all of our time sort of undoing what they're doing, because it's an outside-in show. It's everything about noticing people's eyes and facial expressions and stuff. It's very, very exo, very, very WYSIWYG. And the face is sort of the target for Ekman's work. And it's very third person. It's very what they're doing. It's never what you're doing. It's what they're doing, always what they're doing. And so you never see the face that the other face is reacting to. So because, you know, one of the blind spots in that approach is that you don't know what reaction you're inducing by your own facial expressions because you can't see your own face. And, of course, you can't detect your own micro-expressions. So it's a strange fish. When he's able to do it, he's able to induce it on other people, but he's not able to recognize it in himself. And I think that's sort of the Mobius strip that the show is trying to get at, because he can't seem to shut it off. The last scene of the show when he's walking down the steps and he's overhearing all the conversations, everywhere he looks, he sees lies. And that's one of the things about those third-person maps, those cognitive maps, especially those ontocognitive maps, which reinforce themselves with self-talk. It's hard to separate yourself from that filter. But when you can tease out your behavior from your organism, as I talk like a Swedish professor, then you start seeing patterns. You start seeing a bias. You start seeing a terrain, if you will, instead of a map. And that's what we try to talk about here on Somatime, as we parlay that into a worldwide audience and total domination. Starting with listener one.
Who is listening?
Who is listening now that it can stream, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I took a look at this under the hood, And what I kind of found out was is that, you know, we've been migrating around since we buried the naked Soma on Soma Hill somewhere in November around the election. And I wanted to get the show pointed in the right direction. Now Val and I have been fighting like thieves off the air about many things. I don't even know. Pudding, recipes, anything you want. But for the most part, it's always been about the mystery of the container. Of how, you know, what... Yeah, see, there we need to... Yeah, that's it. We need a... I don't know where my thing is here.
Find I it. Do.
There it is. I got it. 9:10, the Eco Ugg makes its presence. So that you guys can skip the shorthand that we talk about and just notice this stuff like you notice it in regular life and put it into a container. Now, you have to establish, and the one show that stuck out to me was one of the most unlistenable shows we did with Lafrano. I listened to it the other night, overnight, schmoozing under the covers here in the office, the NLP show, because NLP is parallel. It's one of my trainings. It runs parallel to the stuff we talk about in the Somatic Method in that it is tofu. NLP shows up in business, it shows up in therapy, it shows up in education, neurolinguistic programming for the uninitiated. And the Somatic Method is a body approach to that cognitive map. So it's like, how do you respond, how does your body respond to all that information? So it's like, it is tofu. And we've had, I don't know, 2 years to try to find this thing, a parking space in the, you know, in the marketplace. A parking space in the marketplace. Ooh. And basically, we've been kind of, you know, beeped out of a lot of things. And we're going to try and steer things now to the roles that we naturally take, Professor Val and I, caregivers.
Uh-huh.
And we take that role grudgingly. We have a sape on tonight who has transcended that and has been able to arrive at a point in his life where he is now calling himself a mentor.
And on cue,
he has floated into our little cloud. So
fire
him up. I will find the horn.
Okay, get the
there we go, and the submarine leaves the dock. And joining us now from an undisclosed location in Seattle somewhere, we have William Whitman. Are you there?
Yep. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how you doing? And Professor Val joins us here. Say hi, Val.
Hello.
Okay. All right, so we were just struggling to get streamed, and now we're on the air, so I guess we're going good. Now, I had one of those serendipitous surfing nights about 6-7 days ago, whatever it was, and I found your stuff, and I was standing up at the computer, and I was literally reading it out loud, my Dasani bottle of water here. And so to say that it spoke to me, I spoke back. So I was very touched by what you did, because I saw... sort of like in a grade school when you have your math textbook and the teacher has the teacher edition with the answers in the back.
Right.
You know, your book had the answers in the back. Just give the folks, your website is called bodyandsoulmentor.com. Give the folks a kind of a 25-word or less description of yourself if you met them on the street. You know, hi, I'm William Whitman, and I...
So basically the idea is I help people to live a life that they truly love, they wholeheartedly love. And I put the body and soul part in there just to get people thinking in a bigger picture. So
mm-hmm.
that's what I'm dedicated to, and that's what I try and do in my own life. So part of what I'm trying to do is to walk my own talk. And
okay.
that's clearly where I find... my feet of clay. And so part of what you get to deal with when you deal with me is someone who's really clear about all the flaws that I've got, which means that I can help other people. Because I know what everyone's going through. We're all humans, and we basically fight the same battles every day.
Now, for those listening to the undercurrents there, that would be called the Eco 101, noticing that humans are imperfect, which only 11% of us can do that naturally, and William is carrying
yep.
that signature well.
Yep.
So now that you made that distinction so that we're all in the same pool together, because a lot of the gurus out there basically treat the great unwashed like a bunch of dirty clams, and you come to, the altar of Chopra, whoever, and you are cleansed from the trials and tribulations of karmic life, and you wander back out into your little Sufi land and come back in 3 months again to hose you off. How do you make it so that it's an even-steven situation where there's a sort of a resonant exchange going on between you and the client?
Partly the deal I do when a client comes to me, either in person or over the phone, I continually remember who they really are. So there's two pieces to this question. One is, I remember who I really am, so I've got a fairly decent piece of humility because I live inside this thing. I just wrote a short newsletter today. I woke up insane this morning. I was terrified with the recession. I was pretty sure there were no more patients in the world. So I'm pretty clear. I have to fight that stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
I sat down, did 10 minutes of Byron Katie's kind of work, and got clear. Went for a bike ride, got more clear. So I do the same things. The flip side is goes way back to a story my mom told me when I was 9 years old, and it's one of the best gifts that she gave me, which was we were spending summers in Sandy Springs, Maryland, and we kept my money, my savings, which may have been about $20, in the Sandy Springs bank, and it was a Quaker bank. And I was into cops, robbers, all that kind of stuff. And these guards did not carry guns. So obviously I was worried about my money. And I asked Mom, how come they don't have guns? And she said, well, they're Quakers, and they believe there is that of Christ in everyone. And it blew my mind. I totally got it. Oh, well, if it's Christ, you're not going to shoot him, for God's sakes. So I didn't use that language, but that was, I just totally got the whole picture. So when my patients walk in, they may have forgotten who they are, but my job is to see the Christ in them, or the Buddha in them, or the enlightened part in them, or the God self inside of them. So that's the other way of being equal, is I know that they've got flaws, but I also have to hold in mind the whole time that there's this divine being in my room.
That's tough to do. As you say, if you wake up crazy, I pretty much head home crazy and try to come back sane. And this is one of those things where you get into belief systems with clients. We had somebody a couple weeks ago, actually out in your neck of the woods, I think she was from Oregon, that did a variety of modalities and was much more adept at able to take like that, we call it the lumberjack out there in Oregon. And instead of talking about high, abstract metaphysical stuff, would reduce it down to his world or interpret it in his world so that it meant something to him. So this is the first mystery question: is why is it so tough for people in general to take care of themselves on all these levels? Is it just that there's no support system for it, or is it just that they wait for the problem because they're kind of conditioned to fix things when they're broken and not fix the roof while it's sunny out? How do you get around that obstacle?
Well, I think that the person you just talked about, she doesn't reduce things down, and you corrected yourself. She basically translates to speak to whoever's in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a pretty strong belief that everybody does want to take care of themselves and is doing the best they can. And what they need is, an old psychological term called reframing.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to translate for people, so that they can see it in their own language, in their own terms. And I think good therapists of any sort, or good salesmen of any sort for that matter, learn how to translate and speak to the language of the person they're talking to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure, because one of the things, the reason why I was saying, reduce down, because it dealing with an abstract versus a concrete concept, you're going chunking up and chunking down. I was NLP-sizing there, I guess, a little bit. And that's the thing I think that happens with the client, because the client looks out and they see body work and they see therapy. They see surgery and they see drugs. They don't see all the nuances that the practitioner sees where, for example, Professor Val practices Reiki. Now, how do you differentiate that from polarity work or any number of modalities? You do craniosacral work. the client doesn't have the wherewithal or even the vested interest in knowing those distinctions. They just want to experience you, the person, as a practitioner, and they're trying to develop this healing relationship. How do you get out of that alphabet soup, if you will, so that they understand that they're coming there not just because you do this magical therapy, but because you as a person are available to them on a level that maybe their average practitioner out there or their conventional practitioner might not be? What makes you distinct in that regard?
Well, I think you nailed it a couple places. I don't get into the alphabet soup in the first place for all the reasons you said. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
It's only people inside the profession that really care that somebody's doing Reiki or Polarity therapy or cranial sacral. The normal person doesn't care. And frankly, I don't either. it's just stuff. What they're coming for, and you said it really clearly, is they come for a relationship. It's the relationship that heals. And again, that goes back to honoring the patient and then trying to find language that means something to them. I have a pretty strong belief, and it's borne out over 34 years of practice, that I can find language. Most everybody has touched all of those metaphysical places, so it's not chunking up or chunking down so much as changing language.
Mm-hmm.
It's finding the same chunk level, in fact, that's common in their own experience. Ken Kesey, or one of those guys that wrote about lumberjacks, and you read some of that stuff, is, you know, that's true about farmers and other folks. All of those people are deeply connected to nature. You know, they know what's going on. They're probably hunters. And nature is the common doorway for all of us. So nature is a pretty quick way to get into some of these metaphysical concepts.
And you do on your website. Your website has a lot of opportunities. Like, why don't you explain to the folks, on your website you talk about this winter being the season of the zombie. I mean, that might, east of the Rockies, that might be a little weird, but, you know, as we walk around like zombies most of the time. But what does that mean metaphysically? What is it, the message that the winter's trying to give us?
Well, I don't know about the winter so much, but it's just the season of the zombie just came to me because of a session I had with a Zen priest that I work with. And we were basically talking, you either get to be awake, which means in his conversation and my thinking is present, your eyes are open, or you're in some kind of a story in your head, which means you're a zombie. So you either get to be awake or you're a zombie. So the season of the zombie is partly winter, but more to the point, it's we have been deluged by stuff that just numbs the brain, and we get caught in stories. I watched a little bit of the inauguration because for obvious reasons, but I don't watch TV, and I just went nuts. These guys talked and babbled inanities for hours. These guys were zombies. You know, they look like they're intelligent, capable, wonderful people, but they're in some kind of a story in their head.
Mm.
They're not being present to the moment. You almost never see that on TV, where someone's really being present.
Yeah, it's actually outlawed in most quarters.
You get
TV pretty quick if you actually show up as a human being there. And the thing is, we try to talk about breaking down the fourth wall in conversation,
right,
and things, and to get people to understand that on a visceral level, on a bodily level, in the somatic method. Your approach is you have a conversational way of doing things, and of course the body work. What do you find is the one that hooks into people's life more directly? Is it more the phone work you do with people and the coaching, or is it more the sort of the nonverbal stuff you're doing on the table, or it's person to person, it varies?
Well, it's person to person and it varies, but as you know, body work, one of the reasons I do body work is it requires me to be present.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot do body work, or I can't do body work at the level I'm doing it, and not be really, really, really present. And what that means is I'm creating an energy field of presence that's pretty big, and the person that's with me on the table or in the room with me also gets pulled into that presence. So they're very much alert, very much there in the room with me. And one of the things, I started as a psychotherapist a million years ago, and I used to take my patients home in my consciousness every day. I was truly nuts. Body work, I'm in such contact with the patient that doesn't happen. There's always closure, there's connection. But one of the things I discovered in touching patients is they can't lie to me because I know what's going on in their body. I know what's going on in their energy field because I'm touching them. Now, the flip side is equally true, is I can't lie to them either because they can feel me through those same connections. So there's a level of connectedness and honesty that happens with body work and life coaching mentoring that happens simultaneously in my practice that really can't be matched anywhere else. I have psychotherapist friends who wish they could touch their patients, but for the way the laws are set up these days, you can't do that.
We've had people, it seems like everybody in the northwest corner of the country is very into this, you know, the body-based psychotherapy and using modalities that involve either sensory-motor integration or just getting the patient to even simple things like doing brain gym exercises, things like that. So it's almost like they're trying to bridge that gap between, you know, the more psychological approaches, the cognitive approaches, and the more somatic or bodily ones. Do you ever think we're going to get that thing hooked up together where we stop dividing it up when you have gym class at school and you sit in the classroom for 6 hours? They separate mental and physical education at an elementary level. I don't know how it would ever change on a therapeutic level.
Boy, that's a nice insight. So that'll get me wrapped up on education, and I won't go that far on that.
Well, we have a show next week on education. We have an author coming on, a book called Alphabet Kids, about this whole generation of kids that have been labeled, and their parents are sitting there going, you know, how do I deal with all these labels these kids are getting? And these are the kids that are, some of them are mainstream kids, and they're all labeled up. And so, as long as they divide it up that way, to me, they're not acknowledging the intelligence that's there and learning styles and all that. And forget about talking about deficiencies and stuff. To me, there's a big teaching deficit more so than learning disabilities that teachers are basically adherent to a curriculum that would go out and broadcast, and elementary school education is narrow casting. So they, you know, ever since, you know, the old Bluebird reader and all that stuff, when they stuck in their reading groups, and you know, they really haven't changed their style, even though they have, you know, massive amounts of evidence to the contrary. They keep teaching it the same way. So what are you going to do?
What I did was start a school.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, so that's how I solved that problem.
Oh,
I had
what's your school called?
The school is called Puget Sound Community School, P as in Peter, SCS.org. You can go find it online.
Okay.
I was one of the founding parents of that school because I had a 12-year-old daughter, and there was no way I was going to send her to school. That was just insane. There was certainly other, you know, anyhow.
Yeah, well, that you took steps. I mean, a lot of parents... You know, I have a special needs child. Val's worked in the special needs community, too, but Green Jiminy's up by her. And you just see so many kids getting black-holed in terms of their education because of delays, because they don't fit the norm. And then the kids that are in the mainstream, especially at the fringes of it, are pushed through, and they're pretty much functionally illiterate, and they graduate that way. I don't understand how they can justify that sort of... you know, kind of mass marketing of just glossing over all that stuff, because the kid ends up 15, 16, 17 years old, not really confident in their ability, knowing more about their weaknesses and their strengths. And that's a real fun way to go through adolescence, just knowing all your holes and your cheese and head out into the world. Go ahead. And you know, we talk about it a lot.
Yeah, it's a tragedy. There's a book that I read called Right Brain Children in a Left Brain World, and one of the things this fellow points out is that there's a continuum between right brain and left brain thinking, you know, and most of us fall somewhere in the middle. But school systems, for some reason, have selected and end up with teachers that are way jammed over on the left-hand side, so they're really the serious left brain thinkers. And most kids aren't there. So the school systems really only work for like 10% of the kids that go there. The rest of the kids fall somewhere else in the spectrum and have vastly different learning styles that don't fit. So a lot of those kids that are labeled, one of my favorite students that I did some mentoring with I think would have been called ADD or learning disabled.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now 21 or 22, maybe 23. And this guy is just a learning giant. I mean, this guy is just a master. And he was lucky because he had parents that got him out of school, put him in Puget Sound Community School. And he's now, you know, I hang out with this guy and listen to every word he says. This guy's a master. And it's not that these people are, you know, they're just differently educated. And, this, you know, they think differently. They approach things differently. So.
Well, they made a big deal out of it over the holidays. Tim Tebow, the quarterback, you know, for Florida that, you know, won the Heisman Trophy last year and, you know, led his team to the championship this year. Homeschool kid. Only, you know, kind of walked on a college campus and has sort of taken over the world the last two or three years. And you know, how many countries he's been to, he's active internationally in all sorts of different cultural ways, and he's this polymath and all these different topics. And he got a world education, and plus he's a world-class athlete. So there's a lot of untapped potential the way the system's set up, and, you know, hopefully we'll knock a couple of those sacred cows over next week when we meet the author of that book. And you've definitely done some stuff to make some inroads up there. And then you see a lot of progression. You know, out here we got some stuff in Connecticut and things like that that have kicked a couple of those walls down to just show people that there's options. I mean, most people would walk around with no options, and at least we have a couple of things on the menu now that people can go, you know what, I'm not going to take the government cheese. I'd like a little of that pickle over there, and we'll see where we go. But I want to get back to how you arrived at mentorhood, so to speak, and then when you hit a wall with a client, because every once in a while you're with a client, you're riding along a paved road, and then all of a sudden that resistance shows up, and they start getting lazy, or they start getting a little bit unreliable, a little noncommittal, they don't want to go any deeper, they get a little skeptical about stuff. How do you approach that aspect of caregiving when you're dealing with that, when the relationship is becoming not just resistant, but, you know, a little bit combative of who's, you know, we're supposed to be partnering here, and you get that push-pull going on. Do you back off? Do you give them a new set of options? How do you work things?
Well, that is the classic, it depends.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly that, frankly, does not happen with me.
Okay.
So that's a good part. Usually what you're talking about there is fear. And there's
mm-hmm.
ways of playing with fear. One of the certain simple ways is just to hear the fear. Listen to people's fear. Usually when there are people are getting resistant, it means that I've started running my agenda and I've quit listening to them. And that happens. You know, I've got my agenda and I'm a recovering right person, which means I'm always right and you're wrong. And you know, if I get caught in that, which is one of the places of insanity for me, boy, we're in big trouble. And if I start running that racket on patients, I've got to back up, and usually it starts with an apology.
Mm.
Excuse me, I've been running my agenda. Let me back up and ask you a question or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's the ongoing conversation, and most people that do longitudinal care over time, whether it's body workers or therapists or even educators, there's a certain amount of sort of familiarity breeds contempt where you get like an old married couple a little bit with clients where things can be sort of put out in the open where you don't have to force yourself to take the client deeper. The case goes, you know, sometimes they plateau for a while because they're working out stuff that, you know, maybe is not germane to what you're doing, but something else is happening in their life. A lot of stuff around here, last 6 or 7 years, you know, going through all the way back to the aftermath of 9/11 with, you know, being here in New York and dealing with families and all that stuff. And even in the last 2 or 3 years with families dealing with children in Iraq, and it just, you just see a lot of strain. I just see a lot of people just standing still in the room, and they're so distracted, and they're so pulled in many directions, and then, of course, they're getting squashed now. We went through I don't know how it affected you guys out west, but when September and October hit around here, you know, I had all these clients that work in a little tip of Manhattan called Wall Street that were coming in here like, practically like bottles of Pepto-Bismol, just ready to bubble over. And, you know, you'd look out in the waiting room and you'd see Citibank, Militaibank, you know, all these people just with bullseyes on their back. So how do you deal with that indirect stress that isn't, you know, it's event-related, but it's not like they're coming in going, yeah, I slept funny or I played softball on the weekend. It's not physical, yet it's affecting them physically, and you as a caregiver have no control over those things, yet there they are in the room. Do you drive right at it? Do you just let it kind of sit there in the room and kind of just like dissipate on its own? Do you just kind of play it by ear?
Well, play it by ear always, but
yes.
One of the things that I'm doing with patients over and over again is pointing out the psychological, emotional, energetic weather. And I'll just use the weather as a metaphor. Did you notice it's cloudy today? Did you notice it's sunny? You know how that affects you. Well, pay attention to what's going on. Even me, who I don't watch the news and all that kind of stuff, I had to have someone tell me that Microsoft just did layoffs for the first time in their career,
laid off
lots and lots and lots of people. So we're definitely affected. And in case you haven't heard about that nice bank called Washington Mutual.
Right.
Which is, I'm looking out at the building right now, across the water here in the bay. Washington Mutual is a big deal here. And, of course, Boeing is a fairly major company here.
Yes. You guys, believe me, there's not a square on the chart that hasn't been
That's correct.
It's been hit.
Getting everybody.
Yeah, and it's also affecting people that practice outside of the third-party payer system like us. As I call it, the shoebox modalities where people are paying from, they used to call it discretionary income, and now there is no discretion. kind of wrap things up. What?
That's correct.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's always, the shoebox is becoming the envelope. So going forward, do you see more people relying on your web-based access to your information rather than the direct care? As things become a little more, accessible online, and these kids walk. I got a 13-year-old walking around with that phone attached to her hip. She's communicating with the world constantly. Or do you see people going back into more traditional healing relationship one-on-one?
I think
the country gets older.
The answer is yes.
okay.
Alvin Toffler wrote Future Shock back in the early 70s, and he said one of the trends we're going to see is high touch, high tech. And high tech, despite the earphones in people's heads all the time, we really are isolated. And so people are going to want profound, intimate relationships, and that's what therapy can be, is a profound, intimate relationship. It's not a substitute for others, but we do want deep connection, and we want intimacy, we want reality. And, boy, the Internet is accessible, and if you can get, I've been cranking out videos and podcasts, and I'll link to this talk today. That's great. People can get access to us in different ways, and they may end up in my table, but, I can see way more people through the Internet than I can see on my table. That's kind of obvious. So I think both are going to happen. I think that Seattle is body work central for, the West Coast even.
Right.
We're cranking out thousands of massage therapists and naturopaths and acupuncturists in Seattle specifically. And we're going to see a lot of people wanting that personal care, even if they have to pay for it out of their pocket. And this current financial thing has scared the hell out of everybody, which is also one of the waves that's passing through. We've been in 8 years of sort of constant fear with a fear-mongering administration, and we're now coming into a place of hope, which is a very different energy field, and we're also looking at connecting and supporting each other in a way that has never happened before, or at least in my lifetime. So I'm pretty optimistic about everything.
Yeah, you sound like I said, you've really got sort of your finger on the pulse, so to speak, of the culture, and you've been able to integrate tools that the average body worker would look at from afar and say, that's not me, by getting involved in the Internet and all the writing you do. Like I said, the material up there on bodyandsoulmentor.com, you can get lost up there. And I think you charge about $25 a month to access as a member, right?
That's correct.
Okay. All right, well, you can check that out up there. And just in closing, is there one thing that you would like to communicate to the Blog Talk Radio community here that is a misconception about your work that you can clear up right now ahead of time, so that anyone that's venturing over to your site might misinterpret, so to speak, from their chair? Well, about you or your work or anything you do.
I think it's all pretty clear, but one of the things that I'm really just deeply grounded in, if it doesn't work in the real world, I don't teach it. So it's not airy-fairy. It's totally practical stuff, and it's been proven by me and hundreds of other people that this stuff works day-to-day. So, and that's basically it. It's got to be a day-to-day process.
Well, you, like I said, you've got a lion's share of information up there. Anyone that wants to spend some time with it, even just reading the quotes up there was amusing to me. What's the speed of dark was the one that stuck out, I think. someone said that. It might have been you.
I wish.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us up here. Hopefully we'll get our worlds connected online, and our little Soma world will communicate with your funny little Zen guy and the golden mean. I love that logo you got over there. And thanks for sharing with us here. And we know who cares, and it's you. So thanks for joining us here on Soma Time.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it. Bye.
Take care now.
See ya. Alrighty.
That was a laid-back Seattle safe.
Yeah. Yep. I'm still looking for what you asked me to get here. It
almost made me too calm.
I'm pretty calm.
Yeah. That's too bad. Let's see if I got... I'm also sampling tonight. This is a potential new theme song here. Let's see.
Yes. Everybody now. As I was walking down the street one day, a man came up to me and asked me what the time was on my watch.
That was one version. I kind of liked it. I was grooving. I heard it this morning on, I think it was on Morning Joe. And it just kind of spoke to me.
Huh.
Costas has voted.
Good riddance, fuckface. So long, you fetus-faced windbag. Good luck managing a Denny's, douchebag.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. So what I got out of talking to that guy was, again, he was speaking the eco tongue. Chapter and verse, first of all, noticing that there's a heck of a lot of things that are not so great about him, and he's not shy about it, and I woke up insane. That's the first thing he said.
That was really good. I like that.
There's not an Anto in the world that would ever admit that, but, it's just kind of funny, and I got to go read his newsletter now or later about that, because I pretty much spend most of my day fighting that off, because I'm around just lunacy all the time. And,
never.
No, crazy. And it's funny because he maintains a sense of, he's still a sage, he's still the authority, even though it's an even Steven. He's almost seeing the greater good in the other person, even though he knows that they're just simple Simon, you know. And and he doesn't even bother getting, impressed with with trying to, show them all the stuff. He just says, look, get on the table. And he lets that sort of experience do what it's supposed to do. He relies on the relationship, which is very Philo, by the way. So I thought that was interesting. He had a lot of signatures, and he actually was pretty exo about some of the things he was saying. He touched every base, making him a super sape.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. So that, and that's the thing we're trying to get across about being a caregiver. When you're put in the role of caregiver, I don't care if it's minding somebody's plant, which I'm never good at, or taking care of somebody's sick mother. The responsibility is the same, and your focus, energy, intention, actions, all that stuff has an impact. And if you're putting it in a professional capacity, of course, there's a much more clearly defined role. But a lot of people are put in that role that had no idea they were going to be put in that role. And so it's a struggle. And it's one of those things where it's not going away, and as you get deeper into the the clouds here on the web, there's whole communities up there that are doing nothing but trying to help, like, join hands as we all cope with sick mama. And, you know, you got so many people in the population taking care of people that, you know, adult parents and special needs kids. And, of course, you're now working at an institution for adults. And, you know, there's a heck of a lot of people that need help. And so there's going to be a lot of people put in the caregiving role. And did you do the restraints thing today? Did that happen?
Well, no, because of the snowstorm, they pushed it to tomorrow. But I had OSHA and other stuff, you know, bloodborne pathogens.
Yeah.
And oh.
They canceled the restraint drill.
They canceled the training for that.
That's when you tie up the safe and you say,
"You filthy criminies."
That's right.
Well, what's good about this is that it's designed completely to avoid any physical contact with them. If it happens, it happens if somebody's, you know, about to hurt somebody or hurt themselves.
Of course,
you have to do that.
But
it's like days of how to avoid it. And this place is good. They know that if this person starts playing with their fingers under the table, it's the first step toward them getting anxious. They just know that much about all these people. It's great.
Reading the cues.
That's really good. They are major behavioralists. Major.
Any taser practice? Don't tase me, bro.
That's right.
You get any of that?
That's right. And I have a nice title there. Of course, I didn't know until I read it on the paper. I'm like, oh okay.
What's the title?
If I can think of it now. I am the coordinator of behavioral services.
The coordinator of behavioral services.
Yep.
They put you in like one of those round desks like at the airport?
Actually, I'm an administrator. Who the hell knew?
Boom, boom, boom. I see you sitting in one of those high pharmacy desks. The coordinator will now speak.
No, there's not a lot of desks sitting in this place.
You don't come out on like a terrace every morning and go, "Greetings, I am the coordinator."
If I had a little terrace, I would want to have the one that they have on, what's that called, Boston Legal.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to have it with Denny Crane and the other guy.
What? Spade?
Yes. Yes. I want to sit there with my two exos.
Yes.
And take in the sights.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
See?
There you go.
Well, he could join us because he'd be fine.
Very, very believable. So how are we going on the YouTube search? Are we anywhere closer?
It's not great because I didn't hear what went on, so I'm having a hard time searching. I did find where the hell is it now? God, why? I found a TV show.
See, most people do these searches way before.
Right, you tell me 2 seconds before.
Yeah, well,
but I have a TV show that's talking about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually Fox News.
Oh, okay.
So I have that. It's like 2 minutes, 26 seconds of them going back and forth with the whole thing.
Roll it, because then we can break it down for people.
All right. Now, but it may be Fox talking and not them.
Talking Fox talking. That's fine. We'll get what we can out of it.
All right.
Want to raise the issue.
All right. Here we go. Yeah. All right.
President Obama is now warning Republicans on Capitol Hill. Of course, he came out yesterday and talking in his speech after the economic stimulus role there in Congress, saying they need to stop listening to Rush Limbaugh. In fact, he says, look, we're all political animals. We've all got political bases. If we don't get this done, meaning the Democrats, we could lose seats and I could use reelection. He says we can't let people like Rush Limbaugh stall this. That's how things get done in this town.
This comes from an article that Major Garrett has written on, I believe, FoxNews.com. Anyway, this is during a private meeting with congressional Democrats and Republicans because he wants to get his $825 billion stimulus package done. Okay, so what he's saying is basically is we don't have time for dissenting opinion, Republicans. We don't have time for other plans. Please fall in line and let's get this done because I'd like it to be done by mid-February. So
February 16th, exactly.
So just what does he think the harm would be in listening to Rush Limbaugh?
Right. And here's the problem here. It's a bit of an insult of the Republicans' intelligence, not because they listen to Rush, but because the implication here is that these guys listen to Rush and then bring those same ideas to these meetings with the president. I'm fairly certain the Senate and House Republicans come up with their own concepts
that
don't just borrow from Rush.
Yeah, and that point, and in addition to that, or that they are just so partisan they can't possibly ever come together on a unifying economic stimulus package. And there are some concerns, obviously, from the Republicans. In fact, John Boehner saying, look, he doesn't want, why are we spending millions of dollars on contraception? He goes, how is that going to stimulate?
All right, shut these clowns up. I can't take it.
I can't. You know what? They are so nauseating.
They don't breathe. They're like one, just like a chatterbox. All right, I found a better one here, I think, with the manatee. You know, Sean Hannity. Him and Rush just palling around here. They're so happy that Obama won.
You're the leading voice of opposition, conservative, and have defined conservatives for over two decades. You celebrated your 20 years on the air, by the way, nationally syndicated. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Coming off a record ratings year for you. But you are a passionate conservative. You've defined conservatives for many people in this country for years. He represents the antithesis in terms of his worldview. So then the question becomes, do you want him to succeed?
Now, this, I am so glad that he asked me that question, that you asked me this question.
I'm glad to.
I'll tell you why. I am hearing many Republicans say that very thing. Well, we want him to succeed. Prominent Republicans. Yes, we want it. They have laid down. They have totally, they're drinking the Kool-Aid too. They have no guts to stand up for what their beliefs are. Because they're afraid of criticism, they're afraid of being called racist, they're afraid of not having gotten with the program. Now, success can be defined two ways. I said earlier, I don't know about this guy. I really don't. I've got my suspicions, and they're pretty close to convictions, but we're going to have to wait, see what he does. Now, if he turns out to be a Reagan, if he adds Reagan to his recipe of FDR and Lincoln, and if he does cut some taxes, if he does not eliminate the Bush tax cuts, I would call that success. So, yeah, I would hope he would succeed if he acts like Reagan. But he's going to do FDR.
Rush Limbaugh playing both sides of the fence. I love when an Anto has absolutely nothing left, but If you're reading this with my little filter here, with my stupid four domains here, you hear a belief, okay? Obama is wrong, I am right. He starts off there, kind of what William was talking about. He's a recovering right person. He's always right, and you're always wrong. And then he says, but if he does this, so he's covered either way. God. And the thing is that this son of a bitch influences millions of people every day with this garbage. Ah, and it doesn't matter. No one ever calls him on it. It's just a hilarious thing because, as we know, people don't like to think. It hurts. And I just think, he's a perfect example of the Burgermeister Meisterburger when he's out of power. That it's like now you really see the emperor has no clothes. He's as hollow as an Easter bunny, a chocolate bunny, a little Philo. And he's got the manatee there just basically licking his freaking nads. Oh, I can't stand it.
Yeah, he has the cleanest taint around, that guy.
That's right. Oh, clean taint. Clean taint. Clean taint club. Oh, my God. So, like I said, when you're in this, thrust in this role of the caregiver, the first thing that comes over you is how much, and we were mentioning it, we were hinting at it during the interview there, about this secondhand stress, where it's other things that are not related to you, your actions, your deeds. No, it's the world around you that keeps hitting you with Rush Limbaugh darts that, again, every single day, and his strategy is to just not watch television, which of course is not an option for us. It's glued to our eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be in some kind of recovery, from that someday.
Hey, it's a good soft addiction. To hell with it.
Yeah, and so switching gears to another Anto who's on the log roll, we have Mr. Blago here.
Governor Ron Blagojevich and Barbara Liz spoke with you earlier. And
well, they tried to force him to do a Nixon impression at one point.
We heard that you had first considered Oprah for the Senate seat.
I can't take it. Sit next to Whoopi here, not too comfortable.
Make it a little louder, because I can
hear.
Yeah,
when I get to the point, right. I want. Maybe it's towards the end of the interview.
Jeez.
See, most shows would do this before, but we like to use airtime for this.
We're special. We only have 4 minutes.
Right, here we
you
go.
Better hurry
here
up.
We go. Right towards the end here.
The Supremes are here, but where's the court? Go ahead, Sam.
We just hope that justice prevails.
Believe him. Wait a minute. He does a fabulous Nixon impression. Do it for us.
Who said that?
Somebody told me. Come on.
Well, no.
Say I am not a crook.
No.
Do it.
But let me make this perfectly clear. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not guilty of any criminal wrongdoing. All I ask for is a chance to be able to prove my innocence. And in the state Senate, if they let me bring a case and bring witnesses, I can prove my innocence.
Okay.
Said with a pointed finger, surrounded by cackling hens. Wow.
Yeah, I can't watch that show.
He did something like 22 interviews in 2 days. You know, because they wouldn't let him bring his witnesses to court. He had Geraldo tapping on the window. It was hilarious. I mean, I'm obsessed with the guy from the standpoint that he is so caught. He is so found. He is so just done. But he sits there and denies everything. I mean, I think he's great. And I think if he's given a fair chance to spit it out and say what happened, he never did anything. You could say a lot of stuff, but if you don't do anything, see, to me, the prosecutors were dumb. If they knew he was going to sell the seat, and they had everything tapped and everything, let him do it and then catch him. It's like a Elmer Fuddism.
Uh-huh.
Shoot him now or wait till you get home. Shoot him now, they said. So there you go. You got, and then the Tory thing, just to kind of wrap up our little sapedom here, we started off there, is that Tory writes a book. It's kind of a kiss-and-tell book about what happened in the locker room there. Now, next week, we'll have some clips of him on different shows. He's going to be on Letterman. So we'll take apart the Tory book. But for the most part, he wrote it with Ananta. So Tom Verducci, who did an interview, about the book a couple days ago, and basically said it's a third-person narrative. So even though he's sitting right next to Joe at the laptop, Joe, what happened? And Verducci types it, therefore, Joe didn't say it. It's a third-person narrative. Now, his name's in the book. So it's like, you know, again, it's just like Rush Limbaugh. They actually, I guess, sort of exploit the stupid, lazy part of the country that doesn't really care to press on these things. And that's why you've got the economy on the balls of its ass. And I think they passed it in the House tonight, but no Republicans voted for it. There's the old bipartisan spirit. Hello! So I look around and I just see the same pattern over and over again, because from the neck down, we're numb. And I think, our little Seattle safe there shed some light on that today, that we're moving into an era of high touch and high tech where we've been out in our heads and sort of, you know, separated. Even though we're more connected, we're more separate in a sense, but people are going to want that hand-on-hand human interaction more, and maybe there'll be some resurgence in the somatic community in the next 10 or 15 years, because people are going to be crying out for an honest interaction. And everything else is so damn filtered. So,
uh-huh.
Anyway, uh-oh. Ashley Simpson's disgusted. Jessica Simpson's sister is outraged by media scrutiny about her sibling's weight. This is the first thing you see when you're on Yahoo right now. And, of course, Simon made someone on Idol cry, and Paula walked out.
Uh-huh.
There you go. That's the state of the world. Yeah, that's what's important.
God.
And as I say... There you go.
We're almost out of here.
Yeah, I know. Well, anyway, thanks for trying to listen. We got on the air a little late tonight, but I thank our guests for joining us there from bodyandsoulmentor.com, William Whitman. Next week, we have a canned interview that I'll be doing Friday night with another author, actually, about the book Alphabet Kids.
Robbie,
I don't know if it's Wolliver or Wolliver. We'll find out in a couple of days. So
yeah.
We check that out, and stay tuned for some more coverage on the Tory thing. And make sure you check out blogsoma.net this weekend for my Super Safe Sunday predictions. We'll be breaking down quarterbacks and coaches for those interested for the Super Bowl. Enjoy your Super Sunday. Travel light through the darkness.
Bye-bye.